We're going to start discussing separate compilation today, section 5 in the notes, which you will be required to implement on your next assignment. That you will no longer be producing single source code file programs. That means that the curator will no longer be grading your programs. That's correct. You will still be submitting your program to the curator, but it will not be grading them. What you will do instead from now on is shortly before the due date, I will put a sign-up sheet over in the lab with the GTA's hours, and I will have a breakdown as to who is going to be graded by which GTA, and you will sign up for a demo slot with your assigned GTA, and you'll go there in the lab, and they'll get you to log on in the lab, compile your program, run it upon some sample test data that I give them, and they will then grade your program right then and there. Yes? No, you'll still have multiple chances to turn it in, but it will only be graded once. And only one version of it will be graded. You can make multiple submissions, but the last submission that you send to the curator in a zip archive, which is all detailed in the specifications and on the website, the last submission that you send to the curator will be the one that the GTA evaluates. Okay? So make sure you're conscientious about that.
Will the extra credit for early submissions still apply?
No, because the curator will not be grading them, so it will not be awarding bonus points. Okay? When we've previously been doing single source code file programs where all of our code's in one file, Doing large programming like that leads us to some problems. Our compilation times get to be longer and longer as we have to make just even minor little code changes. And they become difficult to edit. You have to do a lot more scrolling up and down the file. So what we're going to switch to is a multi-file programming layout from now on. Our code is going to get stored in multiple CPP files and multiple header files, .h files. The advantages of doing this is that it will decrease the recompile time for errors. If we find an error in one of the files, a small error in one code statement, we can correct that, and all we have to do is basically just recompile that one file and relink it with the others that have already previously been compiled. That'll decrease the time on the compilation significantly. Now, for the programs that we're doing in here, this isn't a major problem, but as you can imagine, as you start working on a system where you have, 100 people or more working on it, and you have thousands and thousands of lines of code, compile times get to be quite large, so you have to try and control them as much as possible. Basically, we got a lot of advantages that come out of separate compilation. It helped us to decompose our code to sort of reflect the design of our system so that we can match our code more correctly to the design. It actually would allow us to use C++ in conjunction with other languages. I've done that before, where you compile some code in one language, some code in another language, and you link the two together. That's a bit of a challenge, but it's not impossible, and it's done quite a bit. It actually makes our testing a little bit easier. We can test the code separately, apart from the other code, a little bit easier. It allows us to use pre-compiled code in system library functions and packages. Helps us to reuse the code because we can easily just copy the files from one system to another to reuse them. So, here on slide 5.3 is a little diagram that shows an executable that's composed into four separate compilation units. Each of those
four separate compilation units, A through D, is composed of two source code files, a CCP file and a corresponding header file, .h. And basically then, we can compile those separately, and they would form an object file, an OBJ file. The object file will contain machine or assembly language instructions. It depends on how the compiler handles this. And it will also contain, at the top of that file, it'll contain an external reference table. You don't really need to know too much about this at this point, but basically if you've got a call to a function that from a function in one file to a function in another file, how does that get handled? The compiler doesn't handle that. The compiler translates these files separately and forms separate OBJ files, object files, for each separate compilation unit. However, when you call a function from a file that's not in that file, the compiler, you have to sort of tell the compiler what that function call will look like. It has to have access to its declaration, its prototype. We'll see how to do that. It's really quite simple by just doing a correct include. And the compiler will then recognize that that function is not in the file, and it will store in the table information for the what's called the linker program, telling it that at this place in the code down here is a call to a function that I don't know about, and you have to resolve that. And it leaves an entry like that for each external reference in this table at the top of the file for the linker to handle. So once we've compiled each of the separate files to its own OBJ file, we could then invoke a program called the linker program. Now under Unix, this is called LN. It's abbreviated LN. Under Windows, they call it link. And that program basically collects all of the OBJ files together and it merges them to form one executable image. Okay, puts all of the executable code together. It also looks at each of those tables that's at the top for the external references, and it resolves those. It goes down and it says, okay, there's an external reference here at this file. So it looks through the other separately compiled units, figures out where that function is at, and it corrects the call. It basically puts the call in. It figures out the correct addresses to put in the code so that the call works correctly. Now, the advantage of this, of course, then, is that if we've got a system like this, if we spot an error in one of our files, we can change that file, recompile just that file to its OBJ file, and then do the relinking. And that's a lot quicker than having to recompile all of the code. Question?
I think LN is the file system
link. LD is the... No, it's the loader. LD is the loader under Unix. There's a difference. Okay.
But doesn't LN create links to the file system?
No, LN, there is a... that's a separate... you're talking about symbolic links and hard links for the file system. There is an LN command that does that, but there's also the linker command that the compiler invokes automatically. Now, the loader is another part that I'm not going to get into. We don't need to worry about the loader. The CL command actually invokes the Microsoft C++ compiler from the command line. You can actually, from a DOS command line, if you've got your path set up correctly so that the DOS shell knows where the CL, the command line compiler command is at, you can actually invoke this from the command line by specifying something like this to produce the OBJ file for that one. You can actually, you also use the You also use the command line to invoke the linker. This slash SE tells it to name the executable file this. Okay, otherwise it names it some default value. And then here on the same command line, we would specify the OBJ files that we want the linker to put together. That's not a really big deal. But that's basically what we're going to be doing. Now, fortunately, the IDE, the Integrated Development Environment, the graphical interface, on top that lays on top of the Visual C++ system, handles a lot of this for us. You know, you should realize now that when you do a compile, basically you're telling it to just compile and produce the OBJ file. And when you're telling it to actually do a build, it checks to see if the compilation is up to date, but it will also then call the linker to link the system. Now it actually might not do anything. This is a fairly smart system. When you tell it to compile something, or as for that matter, when you tell it to rebuild all, there's actually a difference. There's rebuild, I think, there's the rebuild command and the rebuild all. What's the difference? Well, when you tell it to do a rebuild, it checks the timestamp, the date and time of each OBJ file. It checks to see if that time and date is later, has a later creation date than the corresponding CPP file and header file for that OBJ file. And if the OBJ file has a later timestamp, it knows what. What does that tell it? Speak up. Huh?
It's been compiled already.
Thank you. I can't hear you. Yes, that means it's been compiled already. The last compilation that was done after any changes were made to the current version, to the current saved file. And so it will check that for each file in your system. And it will only recompile the ones where the time stamps for the CPP or .h file has a later date and time than their corresponding OBJ file. And it will just recompile the ones it needs to. If it didn't recompile any of them, then it will check the time and date stamp of the executable. And if the time and date stamp of the executable is later than those, it won't even bother to do a relinking. Question?
The computer is losing time.
The computer is losing time.
I have about 10 computers that have my hand. All of them are time wise messed up.
That's out of the compiler's purview, and it will certainly mess up the compilation. Okay? That's a hardware problem the compiler can't do anything about. The compiler will use the time and date stamps that are saved, and if those things are out of whack, it may cause it to do extra work that it doesn't need to do. Now, so the system is fairly smart when you tell it to do a build. It figures out only the work that it needs to do, and it does that. It's also smart in other ways, too, which we'll see. It's almost too smart to a certain extent because it hides a lot of things. It hides some things that we actually need to think about at times from us. So what's the difference between a header file and a source file? Well, the header file, the .h files, are usually sort of referred to as an interface file. They basically contain the public declarations. Now, that doesn't mean public in terms of a class. It means public in terms of what this file will allow other parts of the system to access and use. Usually, the .h files only contain things like constants, type definitions, enumerated types, class and structure declarations, and function prototypes. Now, it says there that only the parameter types need to be specified. The parameter names that are included are ignored. That's true, but you should still, as far as I'm concerned, include them. It makes it a lot easier to make sure to track when you've got a mistake between your header and between a prototype and a function heading. The implementation file, the CPP file, contains sort of the private declaration. These are all of the definitions of things that are inaccessible, invisible by external modules that include the interface file. This is where your executable code goes. The full declarations of the function prototypes, the function definitions are specified here. If you declare any constants, any type definitions, any class or struct declarations down in the CPP file, that means that they are local to that CPP file. They're local to that code, and they can't be used in other parts of the system in other files. That's why it's called the private part.
Do we have
Global variables are different. If you'll notice up here on this overhead, there's no mention of variable declaration definitions. Huh?
What about like a global constant?
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about global constants. If you have a global constant, let's say you have a main.cpp and a main.h, and maybe you have some other files, and you put a constant declaration in main.h, can it be used in other files? Yes, provided that they include main.h. They have to use the pound include. If they don't include it, they can't use it. If, however, you put a constant declaration not in main.h, but in main.cpp, above main, then that constant cannot be used anywhere else except in the functions that are in that main.cpp. Okay? Everybody's got to get this mental model correct of how separate compilation works. It adds, to a certain extent, another access mechanism for us to deal with, another level of access. Now, these next couple slides here, 5.5, 5.6, they're kind of backward compatibility slides. I'm going to go over them very quickly. We aren't really going to use the information much that's on these slides. They're for your own sort of edification and completeness for the discussion, because they really talk about how separate compilation relates to the C programming language rather for backward compatibility rather than C++. In C, in traditional C, parameter lists weren't included in function declarations. You would say int fn, brackets, and that was it. That would be your prototype. You wouldn't bother to list the parameters. ANSI C compilers and C++ compilers will still accept traditional C function declarations. They have to, because there's a lot of code that exists in the world that's been written over the years that was written in C, which a lot of companies can't afford to have that code to not be able to compile when a new compiler comes out, and they can't afford to rewrite all of it, because maybe some of those programs are probably millions of lines of code long. So, for backward compatibility, C compilers, C++ compilers that are ANSI compliant still have to do this. Since the compiler doesn't know the types of the parameters, it can't do any type checking on these old C-style functions. It can't do any conversion or coercion of parameter types. If I was to call that function with long int, I would get incorrect results. It would not automatically, a C++ compiler would automatically convert that long int to an int and vice versa, and I'd end up with probably fairly accurate conversion results, but not true in C. Don't really mix C and C++ function declaration. prototypes are pretty much required in C++. So make sure that you define these things in C++. Void is actually optional here in terms of the parameter list. Void isn't even a keyword in traditional C. Basically, this function declaration in traditional C specifies that this thing accepts an unknown number of arguments. Also, in traditional C, you could actually have a call to a function prior to its declaration or prototype. C used to allow this. It would automatically assume then that it was a declaration of a function that only returned an integer. Still no type checking that would be going on. Some C programmers realized that this would, they knew this was a problem they had to be very careful about. They were very meticulous in passing parameters. Some of them would even adopted this sort of a format to where they would specify here, they would follow the function with the name of the parameters prior to the invocation. That still didn't matter because the traditional C compiler still treated those things as unknown. So, I tell you this because you might, by chance, if you ever deal with any old C code, you might see some of this. Alright? And be very careful and maybe come back to these notes and some others and review that if you actually ever have to take a job where you're actually having to do some modification of old C code like that. You're going to have to be a lot more careful with it than what you're used to in C++. However, we're not going to be doing too much with that. I don't want you doing that at all. Now, here on slide 5-7, I want you to now start distinguishing between an identifier declaration and an identifier definition. These are the most commonly accepted differences between these two terms, but I will tell you that some authors will use them very loosely. Some authors will not really distinguish the two, and some authors will even flip the meanings, unfortunately. This is the most commonly accepted meaning. What's the difference? Well, a declaration really only gives the attributes of the identifiers, which means its type. It doesn't really reserve, a declaration doesn't reserve any storage. A function prototype is a declaration. Now, whether you know it or not, I've been trying to be consistent in here up to this point and always referring to prototypes as declarations. The actual function heading and its body is the definition of the function. There's where the storage actually gets reserved for the executable. The definitions not only give their attributes, but also reserve storage. You can only define an identifier once. However, you can declare it multiple times. There can be multiple declarations saying, because basically all you're doing is telling the compiler, here's this identifier which will be defined elsewhere, but here's its attributes in case you need to check it with anything in terms of a call to the function or something. Okay? All you're really telling the compiler is here's the attributes, don't reserve storage, I'll do that elsewhere. So the compiler will let you specify multiple declarations, but only one definition. If you place a definition in header files, then you're going to run into problems. Think about it like this. If I have a variable, take your example you were talking about a moment ago. I've got a main.h and a main and maybe some other files. Well now, what if in main.h, for example, along with my constants, my type def, my class declarations, I also decide to define an integer variable. Call it x. So I say int x. Okay? Now, when I include main.h in main.cpp and I compile it, there'll be no problem. The compiler won't complain. If I include main.h in some other file, some other separately compiled unit, and I compile it, the compiler won't complain. However, when I go to link those two object files together, the linker will complain. The linker will say, you have multiple definitions of that variable. And of course, you're looking at your header file going, it's only in there. What? How can I have multiple definitions? Well, the reason is, when you include it in when you include main.h in main.cpp and the compiler compiles it, it reserves storage for x in that object file. But when you also include it in another file and the compiler compiles that, since that's a global definition, it reserves storage for it here too. And when you push those things back together in the linker, when you merge the two, you've got two X's that are now had storage reserved for them globally at the file scope level in those two separate OBJ files. And the linker says, you can't do that because if you refer to one of them, I don't know which X you're referring to. So if you put definitions in header files, you're going to run into this problem. The linker will complain vehemently. Yes? If you only put declarations do not reserve storage. So declarations are not definitions. Declarations are not definitions. I know you're thinking, wait a minute, what about my constant? Isn't a constant a definition? No. A constant's not really a definition. It's a constant declaration. Why? Because wherever you've used that word, that constant, in your program, the compiler hasn't actually stored. Why does the since a constant cannot change values, does it actually need to be held in memory in a place where its value can be changed? No. So what does the compiler do? It goes through your program, and every place where you've used the name of that, it replaces it by that value. Okay? That's why that's a little tricky, because you think of those as definitions that reserve storage. But in reality, they're not reserving storage. They're only declarations. Yes? You can think of it like that. Logically, you can think of it like that. But in reality, no. Okay? In reality, no. In reality, that's one reality. Yeah. No. It depends on the compiler. See, the compiler doesn't have to tell you how it decides to do this. Some compilers might do it differently. Some compilers might go through everywhere in your program where you've used that constant. It just replaces it with a literal value.
Like an inline function.
Almost like an inline function, that's right. Like a macro substitution almost. Except with type checking. Now, however, a compiler that's a little bit smarter could say, well, I'm going to go ahead and reserve storage for it, but since it's const, I know that I can only do that once. So it includes information to the linker. It could include information to the linker to tell the linker that here's a constant up here, and if you see any other constants with the same name and same value in other OBJ files, only put the storage in once. Okay? So there's really no way to be absolutely certain without knowing how the compiler is coded. It's exactly how it handles this. But we don't have to worry about it. It takes care of that on its own. But for variable definitions, The compiler won't do that. It'll reserve storage for it, and it'll end up generating a multiple redefinition error when the linker links everything together. Okay? Now, you might wonder, is there a way of safely doing global variables across multiple files? And the answer, unfortunately, is
yes.
Okay? And that answer is extern. There is an extern qualifier in the language, which basically is a way that you can put an extern in a section of code, like in a header file, and it tells the compiler that treat this what would otherwise be a definition as a declaration. Do not reserve storage for this because it is externally defined elsewhere. And basically you're telling the compiler, I'm going to have a global variable in one of my other separately compiled units, and I want to be able to access it. And here is the name of it, and here's the type of it. But don't reserve storage for it. So the compiler won't. The compiler will leave that information up for the linker to handle. However, you've already been told not to really use file scoped variables, which are in a single source code file program, because they're global variables. They create side effects. There's no way of knowing which function might change them, right? There's all kinds of bad connotations to doing this. So guess what I'm going to tell you to do now about extern? Don't use it, okay? Don't use it. Avoid it at all costs. There used to be a decent reason for this in the language, and a decent use of it. If you worked with some of the older GUI systems, anybody ever done any callback functions to a GUI system? This was basically part of the way that you used to do this with extern declarations. And it's the way the GUI system was able to figure out the addresses of your functions that corresponded to options in the menus, so that it could use a pointer to the function in order to invoke the function as a callback function. But nowadays, with object-oriented systems and polymorphism, there are better ways of doing that. And we don't really need this too much anymore. Yes?
If you were using that, would you have to make a definition of it normally
once? Yes. Yes, absolutely. You'd have a normal definition for it once, and then extern it everywhere else you wanted to use it. And of course, if you do that in here, you can expect the GTA to take out their red pen and go, shh, minus big points, okay? So don't do that. It makes your programs very hard to debug, very hard to, it makes it very hard to debug. Now, while we can have multiple declarations, we can still only have those multiple declarations once within a single source code file. Let me get to that in a moment. Question?
Yeah, about the debug, you're always talking about the thing that don't do this, you're part of the debug, that's where we're going to take off. But in general, there are lots of programs out there that they make it on purpose when they went to debug, and...
I didn't teach them. I'm not to blame.
So why are we doing that? I mean, what's the point?
Well, there's a lot of programmers. I mean, there's a lot more... There's a greater need for programmers than there are universities and colleges producing programmers. So a lot of programmers learn on their own, and they produce code, and they don't bother to go through a rigorous program to learn how to do it. And most of the time, the companies who hire these people pay for it in the long run.
because of the type of code they produce. There are all kinds of instances of this. You can look up, I was just reading a couple weeks ago about an article about a survey that had been done where it showed that most of, they did a study of a number, from a number of companies, and out of all the software projects all of these companies had started, only 25% of the projects actually came to fruition and produced a working system. And I would argue, and a lot of other people do, that the fact that they've got a lot of programmers who weren't trained the right way is probably the biggest reason for this. So you can read the literature. You don't have to get a degree if you don't want to go out and get a programming job. There's a lot of people who don't. I've had several students who have left here. They've went and gotten jobs. Some of them have come back later. Some haven't. It's up to you. You can certainly go out and get a job. If you've got a fairly logical mind, you can go out nowadays, teach yourself some programming, and get a decent job. If you teach yourself the right way, you'll produce some good code. If you don't, well, that's a bit problematic. Most companies, I think you'll find, in talking to the students of mine who have went out and then come back later, they find that most, at least large companies, will only allow them to go sort of so far in terms of their professional progression in the company without a degree, so that they can be assured that they don't run into sort of legal obligations.
It also makes sense that people have, or a team of programmers had the same general type of background and they could work more fluently.
That's correct. Yes. That's absolutely right. There's a lot of companies who have stringent documentation policies, much more stringent than ours. Most of them nowadays have databases of code and development databases, so that when you work on a function, you have to first access the database and fill in a documentation template that tells all about the function. Then you check out the code, you work on that code, they expect you to do, they have documentation guidelines about the code, and then you check it back into the database. And if you check it back out again, guess what pops up? A modification template for you to spell out what the changes you're making, when you're making them, and why you're making them. And then it'll let you make them and check it back in, so that they can track the versions of the code as it gets changed. All right. Now, while I did say that there can be multiple declarations, I was not being entirely complete. There can be multiple declarations in separately compiled files. You can have a constant declaration that's in one OBJ file and in another OBJ file. When it gets put together, it'll be okay. You can have a class declaration that's in one file, and then it gets included in another file, and it'll be okay. But as you might imagine, I couldn't, in the same file, have a class declaration and then another class declaration for the same class right in that file. That actually, unfortunately, can come about if you're a little bit uncareful with separate compilation. But there is an easy solution to it. Take this case up here. If we've got system-wide constants stored in constant.h, and we include that in the module A header file, module A uses some of those constants. So we actually pound include constant.h in module A.h. Well, let's say we have another module B, which includes module A.h, and it also includes constant.h, because it's going to use some constants. It's going to use some constants out of there. Well, now, constant.h header definitions, declarations, would get duplicated in module CPP after preprocessing. When you, the C++ programming language,
When you execute the compiler, sort of the first thing that executes is the preprocessor. The preprocessor is what handles those pound statements that you include in your code sometime, the pound includes. Basically, for an include, it goes out and gets the header file, and it replaces the pound include with the contents of the header file. It just does a substitution. And that modified code, that expanded code, is what gets fed in to the compiler. Well, now, in this case up above, it also, of course, preprocesses the header file that it includes. So in module B, for example, if we had included const.h, it would go out and get const.h, it would slap it down there, it would then preprocess that, and then if it comes to the statement include module A.h, it would go out and get module A.h's header and slap it down. But then it would preprocess that. And inside of module A.h, it might find pound include const.h. And unintelligently, it would just go and get const.h again and slap it in here again. And when that got fed into the compiler would have two copies of const.h. And as you might imagine, it would create problems for it. So this is called the multiple inclusion problem, the multiple header inclusion problem. It's quite simple to solve with some preprocessor directives. And what you should get into a habit of doing now, every time that you create a header file, for every header file that you create, you should put these three preprocessors around the entire everything that's in the header file. The first line of your header file should be pound if not defined, and then the name of the header file, underscore h, usually all in uppercases. That's the convention. And then below that, you put pound define const underscore h, the header file. Then you have all of your type definitions, constants, etc. And then the pound end if at the bottom. What is that telling the compiler or the preprocessor? The preprocessor maintains a little table of preprocessor defined variables, variables that only relate to the preprocessing. And when it sees a statement like this, if not defined, it looks in its little table to see if it sees that variable. And if it's not defined, then it continues the processing of this thing. And it defines it, it enters it into its table. It then sticks in the rest of this stuff here, in the pound include, replaces the pound include with the rest of this. And then it does that until it gets to the end if. However, when it comes to this, if it already has this const underscore h in its table, and it comes to this, if it's already predefined, if it's already been defined, it won't bother to include it. It'll skip all of this. That solves this multiple header inclusion problem, because for the example that I was just giving you there, it would first come to const.h and it would include it. Now that would cause it to define const underscore h. Then it comes to the pound include for module a.h. So it would include that. And it would then preprocess that. Inside of that, it would come to another pound include const.h. Now it would then look inside of that and see if not defined, but it would go, wait a minute, it's already been defined for this file, so I won't include it again. Now that's the way it works. It solves you from actually having multiple declarations within the same source code file. And this will create you some problems if you're not careful, because you're going to get some errors if you're not a little careful at times now, where you'll be looking at your source code file, and remember, what the compiler compiles now is not just your source code file that you're looking at. It compiles what the preprocessor has replaced the pound includes and stuff with. That's where some of those error messages will come from at times.
Be careful when you underscore in between words.
No, I don't care if you do that. This is fairly common convention here for doing this, is to take the name of the file and then replace the dot, which would be for the dot H, by an underscore and then the capital H.
Yeah,
that's fairly common.
Underscore is like in between.
You mean for if you're doing your own regular C++ variable naming convention?
No, if it's like, if then that, you know, link list that H is like the link list file. In the that H file, there wouldn't be an underscore between the words link and list, but I would use the same like link and underscore and list.
Yeah, I don't really have a big preference for that. There is, if you're looking for a semi-accepted standard for composing variable names, there is this thing called the Hungarian notation. You can look it up on the web and stuff. And it has some rules whereby you can follow to sort of do naming of variables. And it's probably the most widely accepted convention that's out there, but it's not hugely adopted. Myself, I usually just tend to capitalize when I have a variable that is actually the composition of two words. I usually just tend to capitalize the beginning of the second word myself rather than using the underscores. I can tell you one thing you absolutely should never do. Don't begin variable names with underscores. Don't do that.
You
might have done that. I think you are, if I'm not mistaken. However, most compilers will use those variables. Compilers tend to use variable names that start with underscores as a convention. And if you do that, you're going to mess the compiler. There's a chance you'll mess the compiler up. Don't do that. Okay. So make sure that you get into a habit now of sticking these conditional compilation statements around your header files. One other thing here now. There are some other preprocessor directives or statements as we just looked at. Besides just these three, there are several others that you can actually use. This gets used most of the time when you're wanting to do what's called conditional compilation. When you want to be able to put in code and control, on this compilation, compile this part of this section of code, but for other compilations, compile this section. If you need that type of power, you can do this. You use a pound, what did I say, pound define? Actually, yeah, there's the if define sort of, it almost looks like a function call here. Usually this is done for platform-specific compilation. You've probably never done too much of it, so don't worry too much about this. We're not going to be doing it in here. But I've used systems before, cross-platform code generating systems, where you can, like, for example, draw up an interface, and then you tell it to produce the interface code for me for both a Windows 98 machine and a Windows NT or Windows 2000 machine. And what a lot of those systems like that will do is they will actually generate you a code file with code in it that has code for both. They'll generate you the code for both, but they'll put it in a format that looks a little bit something like this, where they'll say, okay, when you want to compile this, you tell me whether you want to compile it for Win9X or WinNT 2K, and you usually in their little interface they'll have a little switch that you can set. And what they'll do is they'll just pound to find one or two of those. And then when the compiler compiles your code, the preprocessor will get down to statements that look like this, where it says pound if defined Win9X. And if that has been defined, then it'll compile this code and it'll skip the other code. Or if the other one's been defined, it'll skip the Win9X code and compile the Win2K code. Not all that useful for us in here. What you might find a little bit useful in here is for debugging. You can use the same sort of idea to put in diagnostic output statements, to compile them or skip them and leave them in, rather than having to go through and laboriously comment them out. When you put in statements just to help you do your debugging, if you do it like this, you can leave them in. Basically, what you can do is every place where you put statements that are just debugging statements, you can surround them by pound if def debug and pound end if. And then up at the top of your program, when you're debugging, you do a pound define debug. And that will then tell the preprocessor to go ahead and compile this in. Include this, basically, in the code that gets left for the compiler. But if you take this pound define debug out, then the preprocessor doesn't give this code that's surrounded by this preprocessor if statement to the compiler to actually process. So it's a way of actually including debugging code in your program and controlling whether it gets compiled or not. Usually referred to as conditional compilation. All right, we'll pick up with here on Thursday.